When I go home, people ask me, "Hey, Hoot, why do you do it, man? Why? You some kind of war junkie?" I won't say a goddamn word. Why? They won't understand. They won't understand why we do it. They won't understand it's about the men next to you. And that's it. That's all it is.
Friends, fans, followers, leaders, and true believers, I'm here with one of my favorite people to watch, especially at the Comedy Store, and if you've never been there on the weekend, you got to see this motherfucker. He's like one of my comedy heroes. He is...
Brian Holtzman.
Was also in the Air Force. Where all were you stationed?
My first base, of course, was basic training at Lackland, and where I was kept out of all the marching ceremonies, because I couldn't keep in step, which was... Which was fine with me.
Yeah, that's like supposed to be a punishment.
Right, exactly.
Yeah.
And then I went to Chanute Air Force Base, Illinois for training. Then I went to McGuire Air Force Base, New Jersey. And then I finished my tour in the Air Force in Okinawa, at Kadena Air Force Base, Okinawa.
God damn, it's
I was
funny.
A major.
A major?
A major fuck-up.
Major fuck-up, roger that, sir. Jesus, man. You know, before we started recording, we're reminiscing a little bit. And it's funny because most of my career revolved around that same place from 96 when I first showed up to Okinawa to 2016 when I left there for the last time, unless I do some crazy USO tour or some shit. What was it like back in Okinawa, the time frame you were there?
It was pretty wild. It was before all the only time we got restricted to base and whatnot was when the typhoons came in. Otherwise, it wasn't as harsh as the restrictions they have in place today, but the same thing was happening back in the 80s that happened today. Every 6 months to a year, some Marine or officer, member of the military, has to get drunk and stab a cab driver or rape a schoolgirl. And it just, history just keeps repeating it. And of course, one person fucks it up for everybody.
Sounds like the consistency of professional sports, too. Shit. I don't know if you noticed, but they shut down the bases for, like, almost 2 years. And people couldn't go out and party out in town, you know, and the nightlife, man. What kind of crazy shit did you see?
Well, I saw a lot of Marines just blowing off steam on the weekends. They would just beat the shit out of each other because, you know, they keep the Marines pissed off. So that was unique. Just a party, and, you know, it was just a fun place to be stationed. You could take a hop to the Philippines and be there in no time.
Yeah.
And it was just a place to get away. I had a motorcycle, and I went all over the place. And it was 2.5 years that went incredibly fast. Before I know it, I was done.
Right. Well, what was that? What was your job, though? I mean, what did you do while you were in the Air Force?
Ground support, you know, the equipment that started the F-15.
Oh, okay, cool.
Ground support, and I did that. But it was a great place to be stationed. It beat McGuire Air Force Base in New Jersey, that's for sure.
Oh, shit. Yeah. Was that place, like, pretty desolate in the middle of nowhere? Or
well, it was, they called it a suitcase base. On the weekends, everybody went home.
Right.
And got the hell off the base and out of town. There was a little town called Wrightstown, New Jersey, which was... nothing but nothing. So it wasn't a place you wanted to spend the weekend. Matter of fact, I would go home every weekend.
Right.
My father thought he was getting rid of me when I joined the Air Force. And then I was coming home every weekend. He used to tell me, you have your ass in a tub of butter.
Oh, shit, man.
So that was quite... I love the Air Force. I love the military. I don't think the people know today what a good opportunity it is to be in the military. Of course, we didn't have all the conflicts that we have today. When I was in the Air Force, the biggest thing we had was they shot down that Korean airline and the Russians, remember?
Right, yeah, oh,
007. They were all scrambling to find the black box and Grenada. And I think that was the only two incidents of any kind of turbulence while I was in the Air Force. So it was a relatively quiet, peaceful time to be in the service compared to today.
When I came in, it was pre-9/11. You know, I'm from a small town in Ohio. I just wanted a good welding job. And the original job I wanted was hull technician as a ship welder, which I didn't give a shit if I was on a ship or not. I just wanted a welding gig, you know what I'm saying, to get out in 5 years and have some skills. You know? But the job was closed. Fortunately for me, they're like, do you want to be we got steel worker for you? And I'm like, the fuck is that? And then they explained CBs and all this other stuff. And I'm like, oh, okay, cool. And then, land, construction, go on ships? Yeah, let's do it. But I didn't know 9/11 was going to happen. And I was going to spend the rest of my days, you know, on the ground. But I wouldn't have done it any other way. It was the coolest. It was the craziest. It was a lot of fun. You said you had I won't say a run-in, but you ran into some CBs at Torrey Station.
Yeah, we were out at Torrey Station one night, a friend of a friend, I don't know, and I went into the bathroom to do my business, and then I had that feeling. You know that feeling where you think that, like, three or four guys are going to kick your fucking ass?
Yeah, yeah.
You know, other
than Inglewood, I definitely know that feeling.
So I got out of there pretty quick because I must have said something derogatory or something. Maybe they just didn't like Air Force personnel.
Brian Holtzman saying something derogatory? Never.
People, they don't like the Air Force because, you know, the Air Force is a cushy, cushy, cushy fucking assignment compared to some of these other service members. So I think they were getting ready to kick my ass, so I got out of there quick. And I got arrested a few times, and I got thrown out of Korea. Yeah, so it was an interesting tour, to say the least.
How'd you get thrown out of Korea?
Soju.
Yes, yes, say no more, sir. No, I'm kidding, but yes.
I rented a bicycle from the gym. I was supposed to be there for 2 weeks. I bought my members only jacket and started drinking this soju, this clear sake-like liquid that goes down like water. And 1 minute you're talking, the next minute you're slurring your words and you're shit-faced.
Yeah.
I had a girl on the back of the bicycle. We went flying into the rice paddy. And she fell off. My members only jacket was full of mud. And then I tried to get back on base without my ID card. Told them, don't you know who I am? I keep those planes flying. Don't you know who I am? That went on for 10 minutes.
Uh-huh.
And then the captain came out and finally got me. And they took me back.
Was Osan then, or
Gwangju?
Gwangju, okay.
Southern South Korea, and they worked their ass off for the next 2 weeks, 12-hour shifts. So it was good that I got thrown out of there. So the next morning, they told me, "You're getting on the first flight. You're out of here." And I asked the first sergeant, "Would there be champagne on the flight?" And they zoomed me out of there on one of those private jets with the deputy commander of maintenance, and we went to Seoul. I spent the night in Seoul, and then back to Okinawa the next day.
So oh, shit.
I lost a stripe for that, too. I was a sergeant at the time, and very, 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 very inappropriate behavior for an NCO. But fuck it. You can't survive on that. So, you know, that's like drinking Mad Dog 2020.
See, with soju, it reminds me of, like, tequila without the after effects, the repercussions, you know, because if you drink it right, you hallucinate. You know, if you drink it just right, you start seeing some shit. What we used to do, I was in Pohang, Korea. I got sent to Pohang, Korea. All right, so I was in Okinawa. I got into a fight with this one cat. He sent one of my guys to his room because he was hammered. He's like, "Get the fuck in your room," you know, blah blah blah. And I'm like, "Dude, come on, man!" Like, he comes by and he's like being an asshole to my guy. I first sent him to his room. He's already in his room, and he's like yells at him about being, you know, stay in your room. And I'm like, oh, there you go. Ooh, just tell him, you told him. And he's like, "Oh, Brian, quit fucking around." And we're talking shit. He pushes me, and I'm laughing at him. And then he's like, "Oh, Brian, you know, you're a fucking asshole when you're drunk. And I was like, won't say his last name. You're a fucking fat ass. I'll be sober tomorrow. And then he fucking pushed me again. And I just grabbed him by the shirt. Yeah, I'm a hockey guy. I just fucking flipped his shirt right over his head. And I just started punching him in the fucking thing. They pulled me off of him. And then, like, I went to Captain's Mass. And that's, like, basically a similar thing. And they found out that he pushed me first. But still, I did 45-45, half month's pay reduction and rate suspended for 6 months.
Jeez.
Mind you.
Very harsh.
I lost $200 a month. And then I was kicking ass on this project and went out. I made E5. I made second class on restriction. They let me keep it because I was still teaching classes. Even when I was restricted, I was still teaching classes. And as another punishment, they needed another welder in Korea. So they sent me to Pohang, Korea, which is an undeveloped base. It was a shitty little base. And it was probably one of the best places I've ever been, unbeknownst to them. When we got there, Soju, oh my God. I'm just glad I could contain myself with it because I'm already like one, you know, if I get busted, I go from E5 to E3. But anyways, not that I'm advising anybody to do this, but if you ever happen to be in Korea and you do have soju, I would say 2-part soju, 1-part Gatorade, usually fruit punch goes very well. Not that I would try to encourage anybody with that.
Yeah, don't drink it straight.
Oh, God damn, no. So you go back to Okinawa, what happened when you went back to Okinawa, anything?
Oh, yeah, they were all waiting for me on the tarmac when I got off the plane, and they restricted me to the barracks, only to go out for chow, and I lost a stripe. And see, they weren't going to send me any place, so this was my first chance to go on a temporary duty assignment. You know?
Right, oh, yeah.
They said they're going to finally send me, and they sent me. And this is what happened.
Yeah.
They tried and they failed. I couldn't keep my shit together. Oh, my God. I didn't even make it past the weekend. I was there for one day and gone the next.
Soju and women, man. Let's blame it on that, you know?
And I don't know if the gymnasium ever got their bicycle back either.
Oh, shit, man. So, how much time did you do left in Okinawa after that, man?
Maybe another 18 months or something, not too long, out of 30 months, but I really had a good time in Okinawa, I really did. I mean, the weather's just like California all year round, and, you know, you'd get dressed up in your uniform after getting drunk downtown and go and eat midnight chow.
Oh, yeah.
You know, it's just having a meal card and just carefree, you know. Just, you know, you didn't realize how good you had it.
That's what a lot of people, when they, I don't know if you get this shit, but when they talk about the military, they think it's like the first, you know, 10 minutes of any movie where they're in boot camp and getting yelled at the whole time. And it's like, no, motherfucker, you know, I had more opportunity to do stand-up comedy when I was in the military than I do as a civilian because I was always in different places, and all you got to do with the internet, just be like, oh, hey, is there a comedy group for this fucking area? Or, you know.
Well, that's where I first got my comedy bug. I was taking a speech communications class on base, and then at the end of the class, we had a big dinner. And in the class was the Far East Network, FEN News.
Okay, yeah, it's like, okay, we call it AFARTS now.
Right.
Armed Forces right. Radio Network.
And in the class was these two guys from a guy and a gal that read the news on TV. And I figured they'd select them to be the MCs for the party.
Right.
And they selected me. And it really went well. I had a great time just commenting on some of the people in the class and things that had happened. And I think that's what really opened the door to performing that one evening.
And then after that, you started hitting some mics, or?
Then I went to, when I got out of the Air Force, I went up to Northern California and got a job with the airline. And I started doing open mics.
Oh, yeah?
Sunday night at the Punchline was open mic night. They always put me up in the Holy City Zoo, that famous place that Robin Williams made famous.
Right.
and all the open mics. It was a place called the Rose and Thistle. And it was just fun. Every night we would pile into the car and just go to these open mics, you know. And then the earthquake hit, you know, during the World Series. Remember that? Was that 89? And I decided to move to Los Angeles and get into the Comedy Store. That was my big goal. And just see how it would go. And that's how I wound up here in Los Angeles.
Yeah. At the fucking world-famous Comedy Store,
took me
man.
5 years to get in.
Well, what was the process like back then?
She kept telling me, clean it up. You can come back and come back. And finally, she saw me up in the belly room with the Don Barris, the Simply Don show.
Yeah.
And she said, okay, he can go up on Sunday. He can go up on Monday nights. Every Monday night, he can go up and give him 10 minutes. And I did that, and then she made me a paid regular. But that didn't happen for 5 years.
Yeah. Fuck. That's still awesome that you made it, though, you know?
Yeah, I'm very humbled by the fact that I was able to see Mitzi Shore and be great friends with her. And it was just seeing all those comics and...
It's funny, Don's the reason why I ended up getting in the at the store too, you know. So
oh, Simply Don, so, Don Barris, yeah. God bless him.
Yeah,
you know, it's too bad he's from Michigan, but otherwise he's a great guy, you know.
Yeah, yeah, he's got that Michigan love, man. I grew up in Ohio, Michigan. You know, I go back and forth Ohio, Michigan, and it was just like the last place I lived before I went transferred. I lived in Michigan right over the border for a little bit, right? And it was funny. I was shooting this shit with Don. He's like, where are you from? I was like, well, I just lived in Michigan. And then later on, he found out I was actually born in Ohio. So now he's like, throws that. Well, but yeah, but you're born in Ohio. Oh. Bullshit every once in a while. It's pretty funny, though.
Technicality.
Yeah, well, you know, I was born there. All my teams are Detroit-based, you know, so. But, like... That time frame between you getting out and you getting into comedy, what was that like, man? Was it pretty rough? Because like a lot of people have me personally, like right now, I'm kind of in a rut, you know, just mentally when it comes to a lot of things. But did you go through any like a little bit of dark times, if you don't mind me asking?
Well, it's hard for the single GI because if you're married and you have a family. They move you out of base housing, or they move you, and they pick up your belongings.
Yep.
You kind of know you're moving out. You gradually experience the move, so it's not a total shock. But if you're a single GI, like I was, and you were probably,
yep. Oh, yeah.
Living in the barracks one day, the next day, you're on the street. And that's what happened to me in Okinawa. One day, I was in the military. I got on the Freedom Bird, went to Travis Air Force Base in California. They told me I got dressed up in my uniform. I was so proud to be leaving the service, and they told me, you know what they told me? They said, oh, you didn't have to be in your uniform.
Oh, shit.
And there I was, and from Okinawa, the streets in America was so wide. Did you see that when you got back?
Oh, my God, yeah. Well, I drive heavy equipment, so I mean, I'm a CV, so every once in a while I'm driving these deuce and a halfs, but what you guys had then, we have MTVRs now, about the same width. Driving down these fucking streets, always worrying about hitting the car mirror, it's fucking crazy, but yeah.
So that was a shock, and then I came back, I did some traveling in California, I went to... visit my friend Marcos in Georgia Air Force Base, which is closed now in California. And then I went back to Long Island, and I, just like every other GI, you know, I went to collect unemployment, and I didn't like the lady's attitude.
Yeah.
And I just said, you know, fuck you, fuck this, and I left. I didn't even collect benefits because her attitude was so toxic. And then I got some jobs, and I got one job. It was at Merrill Lynch. My friend got me a job at Merrill Lynch, and I talked to the lady who was training me on the first day, and she said, she said something like, you know, how long are you going to be here? And she says, oh, you got to be here like 20 years or something, you know, something discouraging, you know, and I didn't even, lunchtime came and I just went right
fuck
home.
This. Yeah.
And I didn't. And so there's going to be jobs that you get that you don't like, and that you just, because the military is such a, it's just a great foundation. It's just you feel part of something huge, and then you come out and you get this civilian job, and you just don't think it's all of that.
Well, that's why I would re-enlist for 6 years at a time, because I've gotten a lot of those "fuck this, dude, this is bullshit" attitude days, where I know it would have cost me one of them days just to do that, and I'm like, I'm not re-enlisting and I'm done. So I did it for 6 years at a time. It's a long fucking time. I can't have the mentality.
I bet you got a nice bonus too for doing that.
I get paid. I get paid every, you know, for just this. It's a small pension, but it's something, you know. It covers my bills, and I can do comedy, and that's the biggest thing, you know.
So I guess the only thing I can say to a separating GI is just hang in there, and that right job or that opportunity or that thing you want to do will present itself. I mean, the computer today is a great tool. And you may not like the job you get in the beginning, but certainly it'll just be a bridge or a stepping stone.
Yeah.
Because, as everybody knows, employers, they don't like to see big gaps of unemployment on your resume. Employers do like people who have been in the military. They like the discipline that they had and experienced and their service. So there are a lot of opportunities that civilians who haven't been in the military are exposed to, for sure. So it's a good deal.
Fuck yeah, man. And then, like you said, you get the opportunity to do things you want to do later on, which led you into doing comedy. And you're at the store, man. And that's my favorite place on earth. I ain't fucking kidding, man. That's, for me, fuck yeah, dude. I try to end every night at that place, but it's nothing compared to, I'm sure, what the shit you've seen, you know?
It's just a famous place. The first time I went there once, there was lines out the door. Every room was packed. They found me one chair, one seat, up in the belly room in the corner. And it was the world-famous comedy store, the most comedy, you know, famous comedy club in the whole world, Los Angeles, California, on the Sunset Strip. And, it's just, I'm real humbled to be part of it and still in the mix, because right now, as you know, the place is hopping.
Yeah.
It's the hottest comedy club in the world. I don't doubt it. There's one in New York called the Comedy Cellar.
Yeah.
And that's, it's equally hot and is respected and got a great reputation. But other than those two places, hands down.
Who are some of the comic influences that you had then? Like, going in,
my first influences with comedy was back in the day when HBO just started. They had a comedy series, HBO On Location. You can Google it. I'm talking about Freddie Prinze. That was, and it was a small and intimate thing with a little brick wall. You can find it on your computer and Google it. It was called HBO Comedy On Location, and that's when I first. I thought it was kind of neat, but I never thought I would do it. And then that little spark got ignited when I was in Okinawa at the graduation dinner for the speech class. And then I went to San Francisco, and I went to the Holy City Zoo, and I still hadn't done it. And I was sitting at the bar at the Holy City Zoo just watching and talking, and I met that woman. The woman who played the actress in the Brady Bunch, who played the maid.
Yeah, Alice?
Yeah. Yes. I don't know what her name is.
No, I don't either, but I know her as Alice.
She was at the bar, and she's a funny comedian.
Oh, fuck yeah.
And I'm sure some of your listeners can find out what her name is. And she was at the bar, and she just told me, just do it.
Yeah.
Just do it.
All right, don't fucking do it at all, or get the fuck up and do it. That's yeah.
So I just, that's where I started to do it, and it was a lot of fun, and it was just fun, and it was just, you know, they say you only do things that you like. that you're good at. I don't go bowling because I can't bowl.
That's, yeah, you know? Don't stick with that kind of shit, man. I tell you what, though, that store for me is the same thing. It's just, it's fucking amazing.
It's pretty
spot.
Neat. It's
yeah,
not
man.
Like
it's, it. It's funny you say that about the HBO thing because it was a Dangerfield special and it had Kinison on there. He did that 10 minutes. And I had so many people on there. And I remember joking around. I was a little kid, you know? And we were like quoting it. We're playing football. This is in like small town Ohio. Playing football, trying to keep our hands warm by a fucking, you know, the outside of where somebody's dryer was.
Right.
So your hands smell like
fucking. Sure.
I still think of fabric softener because of that. You know, we're quoting Kinison and we're quoting like. There was a football player on his like who had Dane Brammets. I had Dane Brammets. I don't know what the fuck that shit is. I forget what the bit was, but we were just talking about how was, we kept reenacting the same bit. And I feel bad because I can't remember the bit. But as kids, and I just thought it was cool. And I'm on deployment. I'm in Kuwait. And Robin Williams, Lewis Black, Kid Rock, Lance Armstrong, before he knew he was a crook. And
right.
And that year's Miss America did a U.S.
And a lion.
Tour. Yeah. Yeah, good old lefty. You know, yeah. Before we knew he was, you know, all that. And they did this USO tour, and I'm like, this is what I want to fucking do. Not just the comedy, but I want to be able to bring this to the troops someday. And that's,
right.
I'm just working on the foundation, because I will, eventually. Just,
well, I hope, you, I hope you let invite me to be part of it.
Oh, goddamn right.
I would love to go back to Okinawa. And
fuck yes. Would that be awesome? I got a spot in Okinawa. They let me go in between the bands. It's called the Jet. It's on, and guy, if you're in Okinawa listening to this thing, seriously, go out gate 2, go straight down gate 2. It's almost to the, it's almost towards the end of the streets before it makes that big ass intersection. It's called the Jet. It's on the second floor. They have a fucking Japanese cover band. That's all they do is they play great versions of American songs. And while they're taking a break, they'd let me go up and do 10, 15 minutes, man. And
oh, that was great.
Half the shit was like horrible and then, because everyone wants to talk while the bands are doing it, but I still had to do my time.
I remember they Cheap Trick came to perform on Okinawa.
Oh, nice.
And both times I got thrown out.
Oh,
I never got to see him. One time I got thrown out online at one of the Marine bases.
Yeah.
Because we were drinking or something. And then one time we got inside and we had brought some liquor with us inside. I don't know what happened at some kind. And they threw us out then. Both times I tried to see Cheap Trick. And both times I got thrown the fuck out.
Bastards, man. Hey, I would say I'll help you out, but talk to Fraser Smith to go see Cheap Trick next time.
Fraser Smith, ladies and gentlemen. Fraser Smith.
Yeah, we both work at... These are the jokes. We both work at KLOS together, so...
Yeah.
He's on the other side of the house. I'm on promotions. He's on the actual air, so...
Yeah. But I enjoyed the military. I really, really did. But I wanted to be a civilian in... I wanted to get out before they threw me out.
Right.
Thank God I got an honorable discharge.
Oh, there, fist bump, and you can't hear it, but fuck yeah. Yeah. Well, no, when I got here, just to describe your place to the people listening, I mean, you got
bamboo
on the wall. I mean, every square inch of your place, this is fucking awesome, by the way. Yes. I mean, every square inch has a lot of Asian influence. Like, it's really cool. I mean, and then... Like, even when I showed up here, I was like, oh, this reminds me of, like, visiting family back home. Because everybody gets, like, a trailer by the lake. You know what I'm saying? By Lake Erie. And he's like, did you see the garden? I look over. I was like, this is like visiting family in Japan. I didn't know on the inside of the house was more Asian than the outside. And you got a nice little walk-through garden. It actually feels like you are. It's hard to believe you have this much stuff in this little of an area. You know what I'm saying? So,
right.
It's like the TARDIS. You walk inside and it's 10 times as big.
Right. It's the high ceilings give it a more spacious feel. It's only 15 feet wide by 44 feet long.
Yeah.
So some of your listeners are probably...
The Seabees just did the foundation and concrete formwork in their head already, so...
Yeah, they could probably have it up on blocks. I'd like to put a second story on it, but I don't think... I'd be permitted to do that. Yeah, if I won the lotto, maybe I'd try to maybe do something with it, perhaps. But well, what a day to have this interview, the day of the new President Trump.
Oh yeah, that's right, man. What do you think of him?
He's going to make America great again.
Yeah.
And tomorrow there'll be a lot of missing people in the neighborhood.
I still think that it doesn't matter who would have made it. You know what I mean? It's like that's the same shit's going to happen
they
next day.
They can only do so much.
It's as far as you and I are influenced by, and everybody's all heated up over it, and either one of them, they're pretty much, Lewis Black said it best, that the two-party system is just a bowl of shit looking at itself in the mirror. That's all it is. And I haven't liked the president since Clinton. The last Clinton, I didn't like this Clinton. I'd rather have Trump than the other Clinton, to be honest with you. And I went from 9 battalions to 6 under this guy, you know what I'm saying? And that's a 33% of my kids, as I look at it, are gone now on unemployment lines and for different jobs. So I really, half of my life was in the military. So, of course, I'm going to want somebody more on the conservative side. You know, this guy really isn't. It's a slippery slope even talking about politics. People get all butthurt.
Yeah, they're very sensitive. They, you know, they don't understand. The country is only 200 or so years old.
Yeah.
It's still a young country. It'll all work out. America's not going anywhere. It's all relative. They're going to do what they want to do. And I wish they just would keep the opportunity for anybody who wants to join the military to make a career out of it.
That would be nice. I mean, it's like it less than 1%. Like that. Yeah, it's like 1% serve and less than 1% stay to retire now. It's fucking crazy.
I don't like that. Maybe if they just bought half a dozen less fighter jets, and then they could use that money to keep everybody in the military who wants to be in the military. Yeah.
Hell yeah, man.
Because we have an Air Force base right here, Los Angeles Air Force Base.
Yeah, I just seen signs for that. I didn't even know it was a thing. Until like the other day, because I can still go to Port Hueneme.
Yeah, you can shop right here. They have a BX.
Nice. I go to Ventura, Port Hueneme area, because that was where I spent most of my career. Up there in Port Hueneme. And then my last year, I went to Okinawa, and then I got back in March, and then I would come down here to the store almost every night. It's like almost an hour and a half drive.
Oh, yeah. You know,
and I go to the store and hang at the store, and then I go back, and I'd be barely awake to make it to work the next day. And then I was on my way checking out anyway, so I didn't give a fuck what I did. So as long as I was awake long enough to stand up and go take a nap.
Yeah, I did a similar thing once up north. I had a 2-week engagement at the place in Sacramento called Laughs Unlimited.
Right.
And like an idiot, I got off work at 3 p.m. or something. I drove to Sacramento, did the show, and then drove back.
Yeah.
And went to work instead of just taking 2 weeks off.
Oh, shit.
I never thought to take 2 weeks off, you know?
Yeah.
And I did that for 2 weeks, so that was interesting.
Thanks. When I was in Virginia Beach, because I love the area, and I'm not trying to knock it when I say this.
Virginia Beach.
I loved it as a comic. I love the area too, but I'm not, like I said, I'm not trying to knock it when I say this. But it's like being on the all-star team for a minor league. You know what I mean? Because like I was killing it. I was in the Virginia Beach Funny Bone. It's the Richmond Funny Bone. I was doing, you know, the big clubs. You know, the best clubs in the state. Then you come back here, and it's just like, yeah, you're a fucking minor league all-star, but you're in the majors now. Try getting a fucking roster spot on the team, you know, and that's how it feels out here, you know? And, yeah, so I would go to Florida to do a spot. I'd go to fucking Ohio. I'd do a weekend in Ohio, and I'd come back. I'd go to, you know, wherever. New York. I'd go up to New York, and sometimes just to network and hang out, you know? That's like, I met people just from fucking off in New York, like Joe Bartnick, and I run into like Jose Trujillo. He was just doing the thing, pretty much the same thing. He's just checking out New York from LA. He's like, I want to come up here sometime and hang out, dude. How long did it take you to, you said 5 years to get past at the store, and then like, did you do a lot of touring or anything like that? Or
No. I've always
stuck right around here.
I've always kept my day job because I just, my act, you know, you've seen my act.
Yeah.
Josh, it's kinda,
I fucking love it.
Yeah,
it's kind of niche.
It's a hard act to market on the road in certain locations, perhaps. And basically, the Comedy Store spoiled me. When I got picked up at the Comedy Store, I was going up every night. And today I go up every weekend. And just spoiled the shit out of me. And so I never really went on the road. You know, that may change someday. But
yeah, well, if I ever get this thing off the ground, man, you're going with me to fucking Okinawa, man.
Oh, yeah. No doubt about it. That would be kick-ass.
Well, with the store spoiling you, though, I mean, you got to see some pretty cool stuff. And I'm sorry I keep going back to the store, but for me, it's one of the best things in my life still
Mecca,
to this day.
Yeah.
Goddamn right. Bless you, Mitzi, for it. But who is probably some of the coolest people and some cool nights that you've had at the place?
Well, one night, one of my favorites was Paul Mooney. I liked him. I didn't get to meet Sam Kinison too much. Because when I came to Los Angeles, he perished shortly after that in that accident. So, I've seen you know, all the heavy hitters come in the Comedy Store at one time or another. Andrew Dice Clay and
yeah,
a lot of heavy hitters come in there. And today we have Bill Burr and Joe Rogan and David Spade and Joey Diaz and Ali Wong. Have you seen Ali Wong?
Yeah.
Just kick ass. Who's going to watch the kids?
Yeah.
The TV is going to watch the kids.
Yeah, she has that special.
And
like
Pauly Shore and, I mean, you name it, they came through there. Robin Williams and, what's his name? Chris Rock comes in and Dave Chappelle. You just don't know who you're going to see on a given night.
Monday and Tuesday this week saw fucking Drunk Chappelle. It was the best thing ever. Like Monday, Drunk Chappelle's talking about giving hope about the new president.
How long did he do?
Oh, he'd probably about like an hour both nights, just fucking going up there and just talking shit. Had some chick come up and sing with him Monday night, which was pretty cool, and he did a lot of crowd work, and it was really fun.
Oh, he's great.
Good message of hope. The next night, Tuesday night, he goes up, hammers, and he's drinking a beer, and you know how they take all the beer away from everybody at a certain time, except for the performer on the stage, Andy Dixon, the audience, hammered, and they're going back and forth, and he still has that beer left, and he cracks open another one, because he had it right there. Andy walks from the booth by the door, over there by the booth by the door, right? All the way up to the stage. Takes the fucking beer out of his hand. He goes back, starts talking and just shooting the shit, giving everybody a little bit of hope about the next administration coming in. And then they give him another beer. And when he cracks it, Andy Dick's already done with the other one at this point. Walks all the way up there, and Justin, one of the door guys, or not doorman, he's the security guard. He goes to get the beer away from him, and he's like in between Chappelle and Andy Dick, and he's like, no, hold on, motherfucker. We gotta watch this play out. And he just like told Justin to stand down, and basically, and then, you know, he's trying to get the beer from him. He's like, fuck it, you know, and he gave the beer to Andy Dick, and Andy Dick goes, it's like when you go to the zoo and you got peanuts, and then like, you know, that's Andy Dick for your beer. It was so fucking funny then. But you never know, you know, what the fuck you're gonna see in there.
Yeah, it's just too much. And so he did an hour, huh?
Yeah, about I'd say an hour both
Mondays.
Monday
and Tuesday.
Yeah.
Well, him and Chris Rock are getting ready to do their specials and their tours, so that they work out there all the time.
Anything else you want to talk about to any of the troopy troops that are out there?
Take advantage of all that bucket load of cash you'll get for college. You guys that are in the military now, you know, you qualify for a lot of tuition assistance. So just do what you want to do, get your passion, and use that money. You know, if you sign up for 4 years or 6 years, you're going to get a bucket of cash.
Yeah.
And you're not going to have college debt like a lot of people who decided not to serve. So thank you for your service. Get that college and You get out of this service, you got the world by the balls.
Fuck yeah, man.
You can do anything you want.
Now they'll pay, like, if you get out, they pay for your college and they'll pay part of your rent for a little bit, too.
That's
man.
Right.
So
they'll
it's.
Give you rental assistance, college. You go to a college you don't care for or you change your mind, you can transfer that to another college. So, and of course, the military, the government's a great opportunity and it's just a great head start.
Yeah. Fuck yeah. Yeah. Pays my bills still to this day, man.
Well, you said thank you for your service, too.
Dude, thanks for doing what you do. And thanks for everything you do at the comedy store. It's always great. And you're usually there on the weekends, closing it out. If you haven't fucking seen Brian Holtzman, just watch his shit. Just watch his set. And then don't take it personal. But go watch his
set.
With
an open mind.
Yeah.
Realize you're at a comedy club. Yeah.
So, all right, man. Anything else you want to say to the troops?
Keep up the good work and stay safe. And thank you for all you do for this country.
Fuck yeah.
You're priceless. Thank you. And thank you for having me.
Oh, brother. Thank you, man. Thanks for inspiring me in comedy and everything. And folks, leaders and followers and all that other fun shit, hey, for all those that I follow, thanks for making me a better leader. And those that I've led, thanks for making me a better person. Kick ass and go do cool shit. And don't be a bitch if you want to do fucking comedy. Get your ass up there and get on a fucking mic, you son of a bitch. Don't be a cunt. Love you. Bye.
Incident complaint report. Drunk and disorderly. Main gate, Gwangju Air Base, Korea. At 21:49 or 9:50 p.m., 16 March 1984, while conducting a post check at the main gate, Lieutenant Phelps contacted subject Holtzman while Holtzman was having a discussion with the main gate sentry Riley. Phelps approached the individuals and asked what was going on. Riley informed Phelps that the individual was very intoxicated and was being uncooperative in producing his ID card. Phelps identified himself to Holtzman and requested his ID. Phelps noted that Holtzman's clothing was soiled with mud and water and that he smelled heavily of alcohol. Phelps also noted that Holtzman was having trouble maintaining his balance. Holtzman became very belligerent about having to produce his ID card, stating that he was the one keeping those planes flying and didn't need to produce his ID card. Holtzman continued his approach to this discussion and kept raising his voice. After approximately 10 minutes, Holtzman released his ID card. Holtzman continued to have trouble maintaining his balance and could not remember where he was residing. He again started to become disorderly and then was placed under apprehension by Phelps. Riley transported to the LED and he was placed in the training room. When Phelps entered the training room, he found Holtzman asleep with his head resting on a desk. Lieutenant Colonel Healy and Lieutenant Colonel Henderson, 18th TAC Fighter Wing, were also present. Lieutenant Colonel Henderson attempted to awake the individual, but could not get a response. Lieutenant Colonel Henderson directed that Holtzman be detained until 17 June, 84, to his intoxicated state and the possibility of future problems. Due to Holtzman's intoxicated state, he was left in the training room and covered with a blanket. Master Sergeant Mosier was notified and related that he would return the following morning to obtain Holtzman's release.
Here's this one. And this is my favorite because of Okinawa, too. I actually know the exact location this happened, like physically.
Letter of reprimand, Sergeant Holtzman, December 17th, 1984. it has been brought to my attention that on or about 10 December 1984, at approximately 23 hours, you were detained by the security police for knocking over the traffic cones at the entrance of Kadena, gate number 2. Upon being questioned by the security police, you became disorderly and boisterous. Conduct of this nature is unbecoming of an NCO, and it is in violation of Article 91 of the UCMJ. You are hereby reprimanded. As an NCO, you are to display the highest standards at all times, setting the example for the airmen. In this incident, you displayed a direct lack of maturity and judgment. Your attitude towards the NCO performing his duty was inexcusable and will not be tolerated. Any further incident of this nature will result in a more severe administrative action. You will acknowledge receipt and understand below. James M. Rose, Captain, United States Air Force, Squadron Section Commander. I humbly receive and understand that the above 97-94 chronic is
Yeah. Fuck yeah.
I didn't do it.
Yeah.
I didn't do it.
No, the beauty is gate two is that it's a pain in our ass. We got to go in and out. At one point, when I first went there in 96, 97 deployment with NMCB-5, you weren't allowed to go in that gate after midnight. You had to, like, go into a whole nother... you had to go around Kadena, because Camp Shields was on the other side of Kadena. You actually had to go around the camp. You couldn't go on to Camp Kadena.
They denied me reenlistment, too. That's why they told me I didn't have to be in uniform. That kind of hurt my feelings. Unbelievable. You are hereby reduced to the grade of Airman First Class in order to forfeit $175. But the execution of that portion of this punishment, which provides for reduction to Airman First Class, is suspended until 13 January 1985, at which time, unless this suspension is sooner vacated, it will be remitted without further action. In imposing this punishment, I have considered the matters in which you submitted it, mitigation, extenuation, or defense of your personal presentation. You are directed to acknowledge receipt of this endorsement and indicate the time and date you received it. You are further advised of your right to appeal in accordance with the manual for court martial 1969, reservized paragraph 135 and Air Force Regulation 111-9, paragraph 8. Upon receipt of this endorsement, you must state whether you appeal. If you appeal and you request it, you will be given 3 days, 72 hours to submit any written matters in support of your appeal. And written matters will not receive within the time allowed. And if not, upon your written request showing that your cause granted your extension of time, you will be permitted to do not intend to submit any written matters in your appeal. Be what authority of your action. Can you repeat that, please? What the fuck did you just tell me? What does it mean? I know my rights.
And this Son, is, you have no rights.
And this is the following statement by Brian Holzman of the incident in Gwangju, Korea.
Oh, this will be a beauty.
Following statement is the result of charges against Sergeant Holzman on the night of 16 June 1984. The Gwangju Air Base Main Gate Police charged I did not show my ID card or that I had an unpleasant talk with an official at the main gate. All this is unclear, for I never talked with any Gwangju police officer or any other police officer, for that matter, that day or before I left Gwangju Air Base. The next day, 17 June 1984, I was never arrested, put in handcuffs, or read my rights. The individual told me of the alleged actions was not a police officer or a member of Gwangju. The acting first sergeant of the Cope J exercise was the person who told me of the charges the next day, 17 June 1984. On 16 June 84, at approximately 3:30 hours, I went out the main gate alone on a rented bike from the Gwangju Air Base gym. I went to an art store off base to pay up a bill on a painting I was having drawn. After this, I took a ride along the street shopping and sightseeing. At one point, I stopped at a Korean store owner who invited me in his house to eat. I met his wife and children. After the food was served, the father and son gave me a glass of what I found out later to be a very strong drink called Soju. I considered myself a light, sociable drinker and was no match for such a strong beverage. When I left the house, I remember being assisted by the Korean son in the direction of the Gwangju Air Base main gate. The next thing I recall is waking up at approximately 9 o'clock on the morning of 17 June 1984. I woke at the Gwangju Air Base police station where I met the first sergeant of the Cope Jade exercise. I also saw the commander of the Cope Jade exercise that same morning. In under 1 hour from that time I woke, I was on a T-39 headed for Kadena. In my judgment, on June 16, 1984, I was not of sound mind and body. I do, known as an NCO, I am responsible for my actions at all times. In this isolated incident, I truly believed it was the soju that got me in this unfortunate situation. This is by far not the normal conduct of Sergeant Holtzman, on or off duty. Bullshit! I do regret my actions and behavior very much and know there is no excuse for them. I will take my punishment as ordered. Yeah, I'll take it all right. I'll have another drink of soju, that's what I'll have. So there you go. There's some highlights of my stellar career in the United States Air Force. I could have been a major. I could have been a general. It was just, if I didn't have such a horrible fucking childhood, I've got to blame it on my parents.
I know.
I've got to blame it on my fucking parents. If I had parents that listened to me, I could have been a general. God, I could have been a fighter pilot. I could have been anything. But no, I had to be a fucking drunk.
It wasn't you, it was the soju. It was the
soju. Soju. So there you go. There you have it.
And once again, folks, two part soju, one part Gatorade fruit punch.
So that's my advice to you young GIs. If you're going to drink soju, as Josh so elegantly said, cut it with something. Cut it with some Gatorade. Cut it with some water. Cut it!
All right, we'll cut this one too. Hell yeah.